Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm Stacey Toth of PaleoParents.com. You might know me as one of the co-authors to Eat Like a Dinosaur, Beyond Bacon, or the upcoming Real Life Paleo books. But what you'll find out on this show is that I really like to talk about tangents and soapboxes, and definitely about lifting heavy things.
And I'm Dr. Sarah Ballantyne of ThePaleoMom.com. I'm the author of two books, The Paleo Approach and the upcoming companion guide, The Paleo Approach Cookbook. I'm a huge nutrient density geek, and I just can't help talking about science.
News and Views, where Sarah and I catch up, and you get to listen to our gossip.
Sorry. Whoa. Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Did I answer it?
I don't know.
Good evening.
There you are. Can you give me 1 second? I'm just going to get a hot pad for my neck.
Yes. We're quite the pair.
I bruised my collarbone today.
Were you doing cleans?
Yes, clean and jerks.
Yup.
Just one. Whacked me right in the collarbone. I was like, oh, that's not what you're supposed to do. So I think that's going to bruise. And I'm watching the bruise form now. It's going to be pretty impressive tomorrow.
I'm taking an ice bath after this.
An ice bath? That's hardcore.
Yeah. I never taken one before. I'm really not excited about it. Supposedly I'm gonna feel awesome when it's over. I've hit a tremendous amount of PRs in the last like 2 or 3 weeks, and I thought that I was feeling really in pain because of the egg protein that I've been taking, and Mike, my trainer, thinks that it might just be CNS overload because I carried a 450-pound yolk the length of a football field on Saturday. So I'm going to take this ice bath and see what that gets me.
That's intense.
Yeah. This is evidently what happens when you, like, want to be a competitive athlete.
You end up bathing in ice.
I don't know. I don't know the series of events that got me to this moment, but Matt's really excited. He's going out to get the bags of ice from the store while we're on the podcast, and he's like, "You're going to be a polar bear." I was like, "Oh my gosh, what am I doing?" So,
what are you doing? What is the wait? So, what's the point of the ice water?
So, I'm supposed to sit in it from 2 to 5 minutes, and it will bring down inflammation and
something. But you're not really sure where you're doing it? Is that what you're telling me? You got told to do it, and you're just going to do it, and you're not really sure?
Well, I know that icing my knees makes my knees feel better, and I've seen a lot of competitive athletes get into ice baths after, like, when they're doing the CrossFit games between events and stuff. Like, it's good recovery. And I always assumed that it had to do with, like, the Jack Cruz
cold thermogenesis thing.
Yeah.
Which I haven't read up about, so I don't really know. I can't form an opinion about it because I don't really know much about it. But I know that my coach today was actually talking about, he went to a seminar yesterday, and he was saying that the person that came up with RICE for injuries, rest, ice, compression, elevation, has completely retracted that as a recommendation and says that now ice and rest are like the two worst things that you can do, and what they recommend is mobility and compression, and sort of alternating, like compression and then mobility. I don't know about elevation. I should have asked that. I was like, you're still supposed to elevate? What about you elevate during compression? But yeah, apparently they're taking away the ice thing. But that's kind of a different...
Well, it depends on what kind of injury that you've had. And I don't think either one of us have done any research in order to have a qualified discussion on this. But I do know that, like, if you're having tight muscles, then I'm pretty sure that's when they recommend warmth, because it helps relax and loosen your muscles.
Like, that's why I have a...
Right, so my problem...
bag right on my shoulders right now.
My problem is not muscles. My problem is inflammation and joint pain.
Yeah, I think this was specifically, like, if you... It was for, like, swelling. Like, you twist your ankle and it swells up.
Mm.
And then now saying that ice is actually the wrong thing to do on that.
Interesting.
But anybody who's listening who twists their ankle, don't take my word for it.
Follow your doctor's orders, because we are not.
Hand, and I haven't actually read the research yet. Ask your doctor.
Well, it's cool. I'm going to take an ice bath, and then next week you're going to have Googled it, and you're going to tell me that that's a bad idea, but it will already be done.
Or I might tell you it was the awesomest thing you could ever do.
Well, at this point, I'm feeling like...
Maybe I will Google it, and I'll be like, about the ice baths next week.
Yeah, I'm willing to give it a go. And it's been, like, a year and a half of... training before I got to this point. Just as a reminder, I was, very obese and sick for a very long time. I caused a lot of damage to my joints. I have arthritis that runs in both sides of my family. And one of the things that's, like, the biggest trigger for me on my autoimmune conditions is my joints. And so it could be stress from book. It could be, stress on my system from working out. It could be not sleeping as well as I should because of the book. It could be the egg white proteins didn't sit with my system. It could be all of those things or a combination of some of those things. But whatever it is, I'm in a lot of pain. And I'm going to give it a shot. But otherwise, I'm feeling really great. I did successfully carry 450-pound yoke the length of a football field on Saturday. So, there's that. But, you know what? Honestly, I think also contributing to it is I got gluten on Friday. So I think it's just a combination of a bunch of things. So I'm hoping that the ice bath will kind of give my body a little bit of a reset. We'll see.
I hope so. I hope it works. Hey, so you know how, like, we started this podcast without officially starting it?
No, I said hello or something.
You said hello. I think I said I bruised my collarbone.
Yeah.
So I've been to CrossFit 4 times since we last spoke.
Since we last spoke. Congratulations.
Thank you. I like it.
I know. I've been backseat driving, coaching you from from 4 states away.
It's always handy to have your, like, CrossFit. You're like my CrossFit person who knows a lot. Sorry. It's late. My brain's not working.
I think it's a sad thing that I'm your CrossFit friend that knows a lot. Because by CrossFit people standards, I know nothing.
Well, at least you can, like, help translate for me, because I'm, like, still trying to learn the language, which, of course, is, like, it this whole other, like, bunch of words. So I kind of feel like, I don't know, it's like walking into a place where you don't know the jargon. It's intense. It's intense. So I still kind of feel like I'm orienting myself in this whole world. But I really like my box, and I really like the people there. And I've worked with 2 different coaches. They've got 4 coaches there. They just opened in January or February, so it's a pretty small box still. And it's just really fun. So I actually am going to finish my on-ramp tomorrow morning. And then I guess I'm let loose to do as I will, and go to classes. I've really enjoyed it. And I really kind of felt like it was the right thing at the right time. like I'm watching myself, you know, do these pretty intense workouts and movements. And I know that I couldn't have handled that even 6 months ago, or like a year ago, and it just would have been too intense for my body. But I've put a lot of effort into very, very slowly listening to my body and very slowly building up, you know, more strength and more endurance and more cardiovascular fitness. And so now I'm there, and it kind of feels like, it feels like an accomplishment. And it's just like the beginning, because I'm like, you know, doing these WODs and I'm like, what's the RX on this? I'm like, whoa, okay, I'm a ways away from that.
RX meaning the prescribed weight or what the standard is.
Right. So like the WOD, I did my first named WOD this morning, and it was called Grace. This is like all of this crazy CrossFit language. And Grace is 30 power clean and jerks. So again, I mean, I guess that's...
The bar goes from the floor to over your head.
Yeah, in two movements. So it goes up to your collarbone, hence my bruised collarbone. And then it goes up overhead with some little quarter squats in between to just get momentum and power, hence the power. And it's 30, and it's basically as fast as you can. And I was, it for me, I made the really conscientious and I think good decision to not even think about time when I started and just think about doing everyone with the best form I could, which is good because I still managed to bash my collarbone in one of them, and I still managed to graze my nose, just graze it, but boy, that was a close call, in another one, especially sort of as I got more tired towards the end. But it just, yeah, I've been feeling really good. I actually had a follow-up functional medicine appointment this morning after CrossFit, and I've put on 3 pounds of muscle in 3 weeks.
Nice.
So, yeah, I haven't lost any weight, but I've put on 3 pounds of muscle, which is kind of the same thing. I've been feeling really run down and really frustrated with my health. And CrossFit is like this, like one little glimmer of thing where I like feel like I'm succeeding, and I feel really good when I'm doing it, and I feel really good afterward. And so it's kind of nice to have something like that right now, because overall I've been very frustrated.
Well, I think there's a sense of accomplishment, and I think that's part of what makes the CrossFit and similar communities so successful, is, you know, seeing yourself accomplish something that is hard, that you're not sure you can do, and then doing it it's more than just a physical experience. I've talked a lot on the blog and this podcast about like my emotional journey with CrossFit and Strongman, and it's fun to see you start that process. You know, I don't know if you remember, but Grace was the WOD that I did for Barbells for Boobs. And
no, I don't. I didn't remember that.
Yeah, cool. So that was the one that I did for. It was called Barbells for Boobs, but anyway, I raised money. We gave a recipe away and tried to raise money for women to get screening for breast cancer, and I did that WOD, and I did it RX'd, and I want to say I did it in under 5 minutes. But it was a really big, exciting thing for me. And that was about the time, if I recall correctly, that I started realizing that those were the things that I was really into, was like lifting heavy things for 5 minutes instead of like doing 20, 30 Metcons with running in them. So, it's cool to like, you know, see you start to talk my language and get like a comprehension of the, you know, the scale of, you know, where people are in their progress, and not just, I think when you're on the outside of CrossFit, you're like, it all seems overwhelming and it all seems heavy and a lot of work and blah, blah, blah. And then you actually came to the box and you realized it's doable, it's feasible, and it's something that you want to do. And then, then you were like, I'm going to try it. And when you did, you're doing awesome. And
yeah, but for me, like, I mean, you joined a year and a half ago, right? You've been doing this a year and a half.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me, when you joined, I remember hearing your excitement and hearing your accomplishments and how much you were loving it sort of week after week. And it still took me a year and a half of, you know, really gradually working on my physical fitness and dealing with, you know, and working on healing my body, dealing with, you know, stress and figuring out how to prioritize things like sleep when things get stressful, writing a book and those sorts of things in order for me to, I had to get all of those things sort of put together before I felt like I was ready to take that step. And I mean, I don't think that I realized just how much they can scale the different movements for people coming in from different fitness levels. But at the same time, I still think now is a better time for me. Like my right now, my autoimmune diseases are in full remission, and so I don't have like any signs of inflammation in my body. I'm handling you know, foods like eggs really well right now, and it sort of felt like, you know, those things were really falling into place, and now is the time to try, you know, stress my body in this positive way, and not, you know, I wouldn't want to be trying to do this while I was, you know, dealing with a flare or infection, or, you know, I had a lot of other challenges, especially towards the end of last year, getting the paleo approach done. So, so I'm kind of glad that I waited, but it's like a club. I belong to the CrossFit club.
You're drinking the Kool-Aid.
It's tasty stuff. Holy smokes. And can I tell you, I always thought it was crazy when people were like, yeah, CrossFit 6 times a week. You know, CrossFit people who CrossFit more than 7 times a week. Like, I was like, how can you do that? Like every day, that's like an intense workout every single day. And now I'm like, yeah, see you tomorrow. Yeah. Okay. See you tomorrow. I'm like, I take Wednesday off. Maybe I took yesterday off cause I had three pretty intense workouts in a row, but I'm like, oh wait, I understand wanting to do this every day now.
Woohoo.
Yeah.
So, speaking of difficulty with the paleo approach and all that jazz, I read some stuff in your newsletter. Are you going to talk about it?
Yeah, I kind of felt like my newsletter was coming clean in a lot of ways. Because I think, you know, people who have been really close to me know that I've been really battling with low energy being sort of the thing I whine about the most, but my weight really started creeping up the last few months working on the book, and it had been really stable for a couple of years. So for it to start creeping up was frustrating, but I knew it was the stress, and I wasn't too worried about it. I kind of figured like, oh, when the book's done and my stress goes down, this will go down. But then it turned out that I got adrenal fatigue and massive hormone imbalance, which is messing with my metabolism. And so, you know, I think people who listen to this podcast or people who have been subscribed to my newsletter for a while know that I've been, you know, doing things to try and troubleshoot my own health. So I've been seeing a really amazing functional medicine specialist locally. We were doing adrenal support and hormone balancing. It turns out I didn't respond right to the DHEA supplements that we started with first. So that kind of created more problems. Now that we are working on solving, I'm finishing up a detox, which has been really a miserable, miserable experience. And I do not recommend people doing detoxes unless their doctors tell them they have to, because it's awful. Maybe I'll have something better to say next week when I'm actually all done. But right now I'm just like, bleh, it was not fun. Bleh. But you know, all of this, you know, I feel generally really positive in the sense of taking actions to figure out my health. I'm really protecting my sleep. I'm really protecting my exercise. I'm really protecting my playtime. But one of the things that's really suffered is especially because my energy has been so low in the evenings, is focused work time working on the cookbook. And, you know, I'm working on it every day, and I'm every single day I've got this to-do list, and I don't check off everything on my to-do list. And I hit a point on Friday where I realized that the entire book is in my hands. Everybody's waiting for me to finish jobs before they can do the next job. And even though we sort of broke it all apart so that this wouldn't happen, it still happened. And I had a phone call with our publisher, and I just said, I'm doing the most I can. And, you know, I haven't been feeling well. I've been very low energy. 8:30 rolls around and I'm exhausted and I can't keep my eyes open. And I'm doing the most I can every day, but it's not enough and I'm not keeping up. And I know we're a couple weeks behind right now. And I know everyone's waiting for me. And I just want you to know that I know all this. And he was awesome because he really said, you know, Sarah, it's more important that we do the book right and we don't rush it. And it's more important that you look after your health. And it's not worth, you getting sick over. And I think because I got so sick, like the day after we turned the Paleo Approach into the printer. And I think that was really scary for everyone. It was scary for me, just how much my body collapsed after that. And so I feel really good that he has that patience. At this point, I don't know if being a couple weeks behind right now, if we're going to be able to catch up that time. I don't know if that's going to affect the release date. It might affect the release date. I honestly don't even have a good sense for, how long it's going to take me to get through the pile that's on my plate right now. And, I'm just doing as much as I can, but also my body won't let me push myself the way I did last fall. Like I'm not about to start drinking coffee at 8 p.m. I probably could do that and get some evening work hours in, but I'm not about to. And that's really like my only option right now is taking stimulants in the evenings, which is like clearly not a good idea for anybody. So my newsletter was really a coming clean because I haven't really talked much about feeling pretty terrible for the last 6 months. I haven't talked very much about it because I really feel like it's hard to tell people what the Paleo Approach, what writing that book did to me physically without it sounding like I'm whining or complaining. And I don't want to sound like I'm whining or complaining about this like amazing opportunity to write this book that is helping tens of thousands of people and that, you know, the reviews are amazing and it's just been this like awesome thing. And I wouldn't take it back. Like it's such a profound experience for me in my life. And it's something that I am so proud of. But it really wrecked me. And I'm, you know, doing this second book like right on the heels. And if I hadn't started both books simultaneously, thinking foolishly that they'd originally be one book, you know, I would have taken, you know, 6 months or 9 months or a year off to really focus on my health after finishing the Paleo Approach before starting another book. But because this was like so close to being done, it, you know, never felt like I could really take that time off. So I'm, you know, finish the first book that wrecks me and jump right into the second book. And my body's just, you know, I'm in adrenal fatigue. I don't make cortisol. I can't even get the tired and wired cortisol spike in the evening because my adrenal glands are not making cortisol. It's hard to kind of tell people that, you know, I pushed myself too hard to the point of hurting myself for the people who are waiting for my book, for my fans, for helping people with autoimmune disease. And now I'm at a point where I'm going to have to potentially disappoint all these people who are waiting for the second book because it might be a month late at this point, I'm thinking. But it's because I pushed myself so hard with the first book that I physically can't anymore. My body just won't do it. It just refuses. And it's probably over the long term better for me that I'm at this point where my body says, nope, you are going to sleep now. And it doesn't matter what I'm trying to do. If I'm standing up, I fall over and I'm asleep. That's a slight exaggeration, but only slight. I guess I'm apologizing. I'm apologizing to people that I think the cookbook's going to end up being delayed. At this point, I'm still not sure, but, you know, we've basically just agreed that we're going to keep working on it, and then we'll just figure it out when it gets done. And, you know, we're close. It's in edit. We're going to design whenever I get it to design. And we're just in that phase. But at this point, given that I'm a couple weeks behind where I should be at this point, I think it will be delayed.
Well, you got to do what you got to do. I don't think anyone's going to fault you for that.
There's disappointed people out there.
Pretty sure that you have hundreds of recipes on your website that people can use until the book is ready.
That's true. And Mickey Trescott has an amazing book in the meantime that is already out.
That's
just
nice
to give
to
Mickey Trescott Mickey. A plug, the Autoimmune Paleo Cookbook. It's an awesome cookbook, so if people are desperate for autoimmune recipes. And just to add a plug for my book, there's extremely little overlap between her recipes and my recipes. So between both books, you end up, I think there's 120 or 130 in hers, and there's going to be 180-ish in mine. And there may be 10 that look similar between the two books. So you can get her book, and it still won't make my book obsolete or, you know, useless. And my book will still be awesome. I'm just saying, when I eventually get it done, it will be awesome.
Oh, gosh. I'm at the part of our book where I'm over it. Wasn't it just last week where I was like, I'm at the part of my book where I'm in love with it?
Yep.
Yeah.
I went downhill quick.
It goes downhill real quick when you have to stare at nothing but your book for hours and hours and hours.
I saw that Instagram photo of you in bed with your laptop.
Yep.
And I was like,
pretty much what it's been like.
You guys have to... You haven't turned it in yet, or you have turned it in?
No, we turned it in June 1st.
Okay.
So we've been, like, talking with the publisher and giving bits and pieces. You know how that goes. But, like, we're done with the recipes. We're waiting for reviewer feedback. We've gotten quite a few of it. So Monica's compiling all the reviewer tester feedback for us so that we can incorporate changes as appropriate. And then... in the meantime, we're writing the front half of the book, which I've talked about before, and I have gone completely cross-eyed on meal plans. I don't know why.
Oh, meal plans are the hardest thing.
And then, like, the thing is I specifically said when we decided we were going to do this that I don't want to do meal plans because I don't feel qualified to write meal plans for people. In terms of, like, nutrients across the board and all that kind of stuff. Like, I'm just a mom. Like, it's a real life paleo. But what I do want to do is provide people a meal plan to show them how to make it easier for themselves for the course of the week. So what I'm trying to do is show, like, okay, if you make this thing, you can double it and then have leftovers as part of this other recipe and then do this other thing as part of this other recipe. Like, show people how to cook once and eat multiple times, you know? So in order to do that, I only know how to do that in terms of a meal plan. So I'm only doing 1 week's worth of meals for each phase because I'm not going to do 30 days. but the difficult part for me is, like, you know, I want to write a meal plan the way that I think people normally eat, which is, like, you know, have leftovers for lunch and, you know, whatever. And then you look at your meal plan and you're like, that's not very exciting. But I feel like nobody is going to make a brand new recipe every single meal. Like, that's not real life. Okay. Actually, if you're doing that, that's not real life. And I'm writing a book called Real Life Paleo. So I'm trying to show people how to make it easier for them in real world. And it's not easy because, as you know, like, even though I'm not a nutritionist and I'm not a doctor, I still care very much about nutrients. So it's a matter of, like, it's only 1 week and I'm trying to show people how to reuse things, but I'm also insistent that there needs to be a certain number of seafood and broth and organ meats and those sort of things in the week that I'm including. And so
that's how I approached it.
Yeah, it's like, a bit intense.
Organ meat this many times, you know, fish this many times, shellfish this many times, you know, and it was, I actually incorporated leftovers very heavily into the meal plans and the Paleo Approach cookbook, just because, you know, like, I feel
because
the same
we're
as
one
you
person.
Do. Yeah, right? And so you're not going to spend an hour cooking three times a day, and then what do you do with the leftover? Like, you know, I actually not only incorporated leftover meals, but actually sort of said, and this week we'll give you, you know, three meals or four meals that you can put in your freezer. And that will be an emergency meal for some other time. So I even like, I, you know, it's,
yeah,
it's a lot of, not very many of us want to spend that much time in the kitchen. And I said, you can, and anybody who's reading your book could absolutely scale back the portions on a recipe, make a half, you know, batch or whatever, and then make something new for lunch the next day if that's what they want to do. But real life is, I mean, leftovers is my coping strategy in terms of, you know, not having, we take away convenience foods. So how do you cope?
Well, and I think the thing is a lot of people think of leftovers, like, I know people in my real life who refuse to eat leftovers. And I think that that's because they're only eating leftovers as the meal that it was before, you know? So I feel like I'm showing people how to turn leftovers into a casserole. I'm showing people how to turn leftovers into a soup. I'm showing people how to, you know, take a tuna salad recipe and serve it to themselves different ways so that it's not boring, but you can make one batch of tuna salad for yourself and have lunch for the week, you know? So just don't use the giant size Costco can because then it'll be too much. Anyway, we've talked a lot for a really long time.
We have. And we have like an actual podcast to actually do.
Let's do it.
All right, so should we introduce people to the theme of today?
I think it's impressive that we have a theme. Perhaps we should share it.
We're going to talk about problems with digestion. And, you know, I actually went through the questions that we have that sort of fall under that umbrella. And there's maybe like three dozen. Like, it's a really, really common type of question that we get. And we often touch on this tangentially. We've done other shows where we've talked about it a little bit more specifically. Like, we did a gallbladder show, didn't we? Did we do a gallbladder show at one point?
Yes, we did.
So, you know, we've touched on this a few times, but it's been a while since we've really tackled a lot of these questions in detail. So we're going to talk about, you know, what happens when you're going paleo and your digestion's not working the way it's supposed to.
I really wish that I had the Fart Machine app on my phone because I would have been doing sound effects the entire time you're talking because I live with a 9-year-old boy and
well, quick, download it now so you can have it for the questions.
Sorry. Matt can insert some if he feels compelled.
All right, Matt. See, I left you a space right there. Did you use it? How about this one right here?
Science.
Science. Next segment is Science with Sarah, where I take a moment to explain the details and the whys.
Science.
All right, since we're going to be talking about digestion today, I actually thought it might be a good topic to give sort of the broad overview of what the process is for digestion and what the different jobs of the different organs are. And it's going to be a very, broad strokes because it would take, you know, these are university courses to understand the details where you're going, you know, for three lectures a week for an entire semester. So digestion in 3 minutes. So when you eat, digestion actually starts in the mouth. You're chewing the food into small bits, which helps everything farther down the line. It's why we always suggest chewing food thoroughly. There's digestive enzymes, specifically that digest starch in your saliva, so that gets mixed with your food. And then you swallow it. It goes down the esophagus. The esophagus's job is to transport food from the mouth to the stomach. It doesn't do anything else other than provide that coordinated movement downwards. The stomach is where stomach acid is, but it's also there's digestive enzymes that are secreted by the cells in the stomach that mix in with the stomach acid. When food arrives in the stomach, that actually stimulates the secretion of more stomach acid into the stomach. So there's always a little bit there, but you'll get more going to the stomach and you'll get these digestive enzymes, mainly ones that digest protein, that are mixed in with the food. That food will sit and it really liquefies in the stomach. I mean, it's acidic enough that it really kind of turns everything into some pretty good mush, especially if you've done your chewing job earlier. After it's sat there for a couple hours, it leaves the stomach and goes into the first part of the small intestine. The acidity hitting the small intestine sends signals to your pancreas and to your gallbladder. Your pancreas makes more digestive enzymes that break down proteins, fats, and carbohydrates as well. The gallbladder stores bile, and that's the bile is actually made by the liver. It's stored in the gallbladder, and that actually helps break down fats so that the fat digestive enzymes that are secreted by the pancreas can actually do their job. So that all mixes. And then one of the great things that they do is they actually neutralize at that point it's called chyme, just, you know, fun fact, when stuff leaves your stomach and gets into your small intestine, it's called chyme. And then so that all mixes together. So you've got the digestive enzymes still from the stomach and from the saliva. You've got digestive enzymes from the pancreas. You've got they're called bile acids or bile salts from the gallbladder. And then you just have a really long tube with a really high surface area. So you have digestion inside the tube. The tube is the small intestine. And you have absorption of nutrients. So you're breaking down proteins into individual amino acids. You're breaking down carbohydrates into simple sugars. You're breaking down fats into individual fatty acids. And you're also liberating vitamins and minerals. And the small intestine is where the majority of that absorption takes place. Vitamins and minerals can actually get absorbed to some degree throughout the entire digestive tract, but the main absorption happens in the small intestine. Small intestine is, even though it's called the small intestine, not the large intestine, it's very, very long. It's called small because it's got a small diameter. And this is the structure. It has folds upon folds upon folds upon folds. If you actually unfolded it all, it would have the same area as a tennis court. But it has all of these folds to increase the surface area so that you have the maximum surface area for absorption of nutrients. From there, what's left over goes into the large intestine. This is where generally the majority of your probiotic bacteria are. They will ferment what fibers and starches are left over, and sometimes some other compounds in food. They will liberate some more vitamins and some more minerals that can be absorbed. The large intestine is also where the majority of water is absorbed. And then it leaves the body as waste. So really, I mean, most of the organs in our abdomen are related to digestion. Kidneys and liver have, you know, their job is sort of farther down the line. Like, what do you do with the nutrition after it's absorbed into the body? But it's very, very coordinated. There's signaling that happens between the different parts of the digestive tract through hormones. There's actually a gastrointestinal endocrine system. So there's a lot of hormone signaling between, you know, the different organs. A lot of that signaling also gets sent back to the brain so that your brain knows if you're hungry or not. A lot of that signaling will go to the liver, go to the pancreas to prepare, you know, to secrete insulin or to prepare to metabolize, you know, sugars into glycogen or whatever other amazing jobs that the liver does. So what's really, really important, I think, and relevant to some of the questions we're going to get to, is that really important part where the acidity in the stomach, or the acidity of the chyme leaving the stomach, is what signals to the pancreas to secrete digestive enzymes into the small intestine, and the gallbladder to secrete bile into the small intestine. If you don't have those three things, then you don't have what you need to break everything down into its simplest form so that it can be absorbed in the small intestine. There's a lot more detail I could go into, but I'm going to stop there.
Yeah. Wasn't 3 minutes. But it's
awesome. Wasn't 3 minutes? Was it four? We'll just go back. We'll say the full digestive system in 7 minutes. We can just cut that out. No, we're not really going to, are we?
No. Let's do some questions.
Let's do some questions.
Questions and Answers, where we answer questions submitted by you through the contact form on our websites, paleomom.com and paleoparents.com.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
Our first question is from Leah from Rock Springs, Texas. In June 2013, I had my gallbladder taken out. Since then, I've lost over 40 pounds due to severe digestion problems, and it's so hard to gain weight for me without serious bloating issues due to me having such a tiny frame now. Do you have any suggestions as to what can possibly help me out with the bloating? Since starting paleo, I managed to get rid of the pain that I had from grains. I did cut out eggs and nuts for the time being, and the pain level is pretty much zero. The bloating, though, is just horrible. I eat a lot of poultry, only certain veggies, and cook with coconut oil, and every now and then ghee. Just working my way up with introducing foods, working on winter squash right now, and yes, it's amazingly great. Advice would be great. I eat a standard 3 meals a day, no snacking, just wondering what I can do, or do I just need to let my body adjust?
So, I'm sorry. I was looking to see if she said how long it's been.
Since June 2013.
But we don't know when this was submitted, right?
Oh, this is... No.
I'm going to guess that it's been a relatively short amount of time.
I think this question was from the fall.
Okay. So, as someone who doesn't have a gallbladder, I had the opposite problem that I think Leah is having, but both caused by the same thing, which is that I believe Leah isn't properly absorbing nutrients. It's interesting, I don't see her talk about starch in what she's eating. She says she eats a lot of poultry, only certain veggies, cook with coconut oil now and then, and ghee. Just working my way up with introducing foods.
Yeah, I'm wondering if she's actually... I mean, it almost sounds like she's doing a really low starch.
So, here's what I'll say. I know a lot of people recommend a low-starch diet for things like GAPS and Candida. And Sarah and I have talked before about whether or not the science really supports that and, you know, what it might be doing overall to starve your body about that. You can Google safe starch and, you know, read a bazillion bloggers' opinions on that. However, when it comes to not having a gallbladder, you're on, in my opinion, the opposite end of the spectrum, which is that your gallbladder is no longer able to digest, pre-digest food for you, as Sarah articulated earlier. And in order for your intestines and all of the things in your body that need to absorb those nutrients, your body has to break it down before it gets there. And I found that, if I am not eating a requisite amount of carbs per meal, this is not per day, this is not per week, this is, I have to ensure that the balance of the food that I'm eating every single time that I put food in my mouth, that there is a carbohydrate to balance fat, or there is a carbohydrate to balance protein, then my body doesn't digest it, and it goes through me really quickly, and I have an everybody out kind of moment, or somewhere along the spectrum of the Practical Paleo Poop Parade is looking like it shouldn't look. And that's, in my opinion, because salivary amylase, which is the thing that Sarah was talking about in your mouth that helps digest food, kicks in with carbohydrates. This is all my postulating, by the way. I don't know if Sarah's going to say that science supports
it. I'll disagree with you if you say anything.
This is my opinion, is that I think that the salivary amylase kicks in to help with the breaking down of food when you're eating a carbohydrate. And I think that my body is able to digest that more easily because of that. And whether that's the cause or not, I can tell you from being paleo for 4 years and having my gallbladder out since 2007. Yeah, so it's been 7 years. This is not something that I came to a conclusion overnight. This is not something that, you know, was good for me. I've talked before, I lost a lot of weight when I was doing intermittent fasting and a really low carb paleo. I also was having an everybody out moment every time I went to the restroom, and maybe not every time, but a lot of times that I was going to the restroom, it was much improved from pre-paleo in that it wasn't painful, but that I still wasn't properly digesting food. I wasn't properly digesting nutrients as a result of that, which meant that my nails were brittle, my hair was falling out, and I was having all kinds of problems. So, once I realized that I needed to introduce carbohydrate and I needed to supplement to help my digestion, and I haven't really talked about it a lot, but I haven't been taking those supplements in a few months because I've been incorporating more carbohydrate and not having digestive problems. So that's, I don't know, a topic for another day, but I will say
that... It's actually a topic for the next question.
So... The answer that I would say to Leah is perhaps the idea that you're not able to keep on weight has to do with the fact that your body is not able to absorb nutrients, that you have the same kind of thing on the celiac spectrum. Someone who's celiac could be severely undernourished and underweight, or they could be, you know, morbidly obese because the triggers and hormones in your body aren't functioning properly because you're not able to absorb your nutrients. And I think it's the same thing that happens when you remove your gallbladder. If you're not able to digest your food properly, then your body doesn't have the right cues to do what it needs to do to absorb the nutrients that you're putting into it, and it's going right out. So my biggest suggestion for Leah would be to focus on eating more carbohydrate, and that can be anything from, you know, sweet potatoes to plantains to white rice if you tolerate it. And I would also really encourage her to not eat a lot of poultry. As we've talked about on the show before, yeah. I find that the proteins that are most easily digestible for me are seafood, fish, that sort of thing, and food that has been stewed or what I call pre-digested. So pot roast, soup, anything that's kind of been braised for a really long time and, you know, already really soft and chewy and cooked through, that helps my body be able to digest it.
So I think you were very thorough in answering that question, but the only thing that I would add, simply because, I mean, you touched on it, but simply because she didn't mention it, is that she doesn't mention taking digestive support supplements. And without a gallbladder, many, 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 many people find that taking ox bile with their meals is really, really helpful. So what happens is the liver makes bile, and then it's stored in the gallbladder until you eat, and then the gallbladder is able to basically secrete this huge amount of bile into the small intestine all at once. And if you don't have a gallbladder, what happens is the bile salts, they can't get stored. So as the liver's making them, they just go into the small intestine right away. And so especially when it comes to digesting fats, that's really, really helpful. And then of course you're absorbing fat-soluble vitamins, and that's helping with all of, you know, the hormones and everything else, the immune system, and that can make a really, really tremendous difference. And I would definitely recommend talking to a healthcare professional about taking ox bile and whether or not taking other digestive support supplements just for now. So maybe you could take an all-in-one that has hydrochloric acid as well as pancreatic enzymes in it and ox bile, or maybe just add ox bile and pancreatic enzymes. But talk to a healthcare professional about whether or not that is a good choice for you. My suspicion is that it is. And also work with them on, you know, a starting dose and getting through those, especially if you're going to take hydrochloric acid, that needs to be monitored. And there's health conditions that could mean that hydrochloric acid is a really, really bad choice. So you really need to run that past a doctor.
I worked with Diana Rogers to get the decision on what it was that I took. In, I think, over a year, I took them to help my digestion and get things under control until I was able to kind of wean myself off and do it myself, which not everybody can, and that's perfectly fine. But also, I think you have NTP in the Paleo Mom Consulting
could help
as well, right? Yeah, so I
definitely.
I have a post on my blog. I took pills from a brand named Biotic, and an NTP has access to the company that does those and can do the analysis for you. So either Diana Rogers or the Paleo Mom Consulting could help with that.
Yes, yes, we could.
You're welcome for the plug on your business,
thanks.
By the way.
I was like, that's awesome. I was like, I didn't have to do anything there, and you just brought it up. Let's move on to the next question, because it also has to do with gallbladders.
Dun, dun, dun.
So this question is from Anonymous in Seattle. I've been throwing a lot of questions at you guys lately, but man, you two know everything. Thank you.
I don't know about that. We weren't sure about an ice bath or a hot bath.
Yeah, I think we've already busted that myth, but it's nice that there's that perception out there. I am 29 years old and had my gallbladder out when I was 21. I am trying to supplement with ox bile, 500 milligram capsule, when I eat substantial fats, but it is going south. Whenever I take ox bile, I have diarrhea, and I do not ever have that anymore when I don't take it. I'm also taking hydrochloric acid and digestive enzymes because of some heartburn and bloating, which have been improving. I also have significant heartburn when drinking broth made from chicken feet, so I'm trying to figure that out. My main concern is nutrient absorption. I had keratosis pilaris on my upper arms and thighs for as long as I can remember, which is why I am trying the ox bile. Is it possible that ox bile is not necessary for everyone without gallbladders? Is there some other way to increase nutrient absorption?
Okay, Anonymous, you need to speak with a professional, because Sarah and I are not NTPs and or medical professionals of any kind. And I would say that if you're taking anything and it makes it worse, that I would stop taking it. That's what I would do. I did not just start supplementing with something on my own without speaking to a professional. I went through, as I mentioned, Diana Rogers, and we did a full evaluation and decided to do a dosage of several things for the first 30 days. And then, you know, we reevaluated and changed. And then, as I mentioned, after a year of doing it, I had learned my body, both from like accidentally skipping pills at certain meals and seeing how my body reacted and such and such. And then I talked a couple of months ago about being really careful with what I was eating, because I had started training heavily for competitive strongman. And that's the point at which I actually went off the pills, because I was being so careful about what it was I was eating and the combinations that I was eating it in, that I found that I didn't have a need for it anymore. So the answer to your specific question is it possible that not everybody needs to take ox bile? Is yes. I'm interested, Sarah, to hear what your thoughts are on why ox bile could give someone diarrhea versus constipation or other things. And I also thought that heartburn was one of the things that HCL was not recommended for. So I'm curious to see what you have to say about that, but I would... I would say that it's good for Anonymous to be concerned about nutrient absorption and to definitely listen to her body and not take things that are making it worse and seek a professional to help make it better. I would also refer her to the series on my blog about what I did to help my digestion, and it was a combination of, you know, eating nutrient-dense foods, going through what is now the paleo approach, which was Sarah coaching me through the autoimmune protocol, incorporating lifestyle factors, that sort of thing is how I got my digestion under control. And under control, I am using air quotations, because it's not that, like, you wake up one day and everything's magically fixed. It is, like I said earlier, something that I have to think about and be aware of at every meal that I eat. And if I know that I'm going to eat a meal that's really high in fat without carbs or whatever the case may be, I do keep the pills with me, and they do help me through those particular meals.
Okay.
You sigh because I didn't give you...
you threw so many questions my way, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to try and get to all of those before I forget them. So I think that the number one thing is that... So bile is basically recycled. So in a normal person, about 90% of it is actually reabsorbed in the small intestine, and it's recycled back to the liver, and it's used over and over again. If you're taking more ox bile than your body can absorb, the excess bile salts act as a laxative once they reach the colon. So they absorb water into the colon, and that causes the diarrhea. So it's a classic symptom of the dose is too high to have diarrhea. Now, I don't actually know what a normal dose is, so I don't actually know if 500 milligrams is a big dose or a moderate dose. I don't know if it's going to be easy for her to get capsules that are a smaller dose, but that is like the classic dose is too high. And so I would recommend pulling back the dose and working with somebody to find an optimal dose. Hydrochloric acid, so...
Because, like, I know with ulcer, you're not supposed to take HCl. So yeah, I thought that heartburn could actually be in that family, right?
If there's heartburn with damage to the esophagus, so if there's esophageal eosinophilitis I think it's called Barrett's syndrome. So these, you know, there's really severe damage to the esophagus, then hydrochloric acid is not recommended. But as long as there's no, or if there's a hiatal hernia, which affects the lower esophageal sphincter and stops that from closing properly, that sphincter that divides the esophagus from the stomach. So if there's something going on up there so that you know that a lot of that acid has a high chance of coming back up, then it's contraindicated. It's contraindicated if you have had a history of stomach ulcers or small intestinal ulcers, if you take blood thinners or add like NSAIDs or aspirin. It's contraindicated if you, I'm trying to think of all the different things, if you have blood clotting disorders. I'm pretty sure there's more, but I'm just not accessing them all in my brain right now. But it's actually, so when the suspected cause of heartburn is small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, it is actually a commonly recommended supplement. You have to be careful with it, because if you're adding acid to your stomach and the acid is coming up your esophagus, then you have more ability to be damaging your esophagus, and that increases your risk of esophageal cancer. And I mean, that's that bad idea. So again, she could be just doing digestive enzymes and ox bile and pulling back on her ox bile dose. But it's definitely one of those cases where working with somebody to optimize the doses, who's going to know what to watch for if it's too high, is definitely recommended.
Cool.
So our next question is from Naz from Lymington Spa, England. And I just have to say, any town with the name Spa, like right in the town name, sounds like a pretty awesome place to live.
True dat. I'm going to come visit Naz.
Right. It's going to be a party. So Naz writes, first of all, hello to you, Stacey and Sarah. I love listening to you guys every week all the way here in England and find your show both very informative while lots of fun to listen to. Great work.
Thank you. You know how to get your question answered.
You can always butter us up. It will, or coconut oil us up. What?
You can ghee us up.
You can ghee us up. It's culture that ghee. It's going downhill quick, obviously.
Yeah, it is.
It's my bedtime. All right. So Naz has quite a detailed history. I'm not going to read her whole history of digestive symptoms and testing and antibiotics and all kinds of crazy, not fun stuff. So she got really frustrated with everything. And I'm going to continue the question from here. I seeked out alternative treatment and found a naturopath working with kinesiology. I saw her for a 90-minute session in which she tested me using muscle testing for food intolerances and other reasons why I was feeling this way. She told me I have candida toxins and that I'm intolerant to cow's dairy, wheat, bananas, honey, chocolate, and refined sugars. She also gave me a prescription for 3 supplements to take until I see her again in August. Oh, and she diagnosed me with low stomach acid levels. My question is, do you know if this is a reliable method for food intolerance testing? Should I seek a second opinion? And if so, what tests should I be asking for? I asked her about taking betaine HCl or hydrochloric acid for my low stomach acid levels, but she said we will discuss that next time I see her. Thanks for all the help and apologies for the essay. Well, I didn't read the whole essay. Stacey, you want to have at it or you want me to jump in?
I'm just going to say that I haven't done that for myself, and it's not something that I would do for my children or our family. I think that there are certainly tests that can help you indicate things like candida or low stomach acid. I don't know enough about what she did or the interview that she went through or any of the tests that she took with this woman. I think that low stomach acid's pretty easy to diagnose just kind of talking through how someone reacts to food. I also think it's very common, especially with people who have digestive problems or even people who, you know, drink a lot with meals. Over time, you build up that low stomach acid, or in my case, being a vegetarian for 7 years, when I tried to eat protein again, it was very difficult. There are a myriad of issues that can come about that I believe that could be a correct diagnosis. Like, a lot of people could have candida and a lot of people could have low stomach acid. I'm hoping that she didn't just go see someone who told her a general diagnosis as to what is common and then told her to not eat things that are commonly a problem for people. I mean, essentially what she's told her is gluten-free, dairy-free, and then
refined sugar-free,
which is pretty close.
3/4 of the way to paleo.
Right. And I think actually part of her earlier story said that she's had difficult times with legumes and some other things. That might have been someone else. But I think in general, depending on what supplement she's put her on, it's not necessarily a worrisome or a troublesome diagnosis. It's just not what I would have done to get there, especially considering some of the things that she's said that she's undergone test-wise, like, you know, significant medical testing. So I hope that it really works out for her, but I would also just advise her, if it were me, to ask really hard questions, to look into what kind of testing and diagnosis she's getting and be prepared to ask questions, just like you would, or I would, with a medical professional, regular doctor, anybody. You know, I don't just take what they tell me to do and go do it. I say, why? You know, I want justification. I want to know that it's based in science and based on how my body's reacting and all that kind of stuff. So perhaps I don't understand enough of what the test is, but I have a very difficult time believing that there could be some sort of muscle response to food intolerance in order to give the diagnosis of candida and stomach acid, from what I understand of science. And now I'll hand it over to Sarah.
All right. I'm going to walk a tightrope right now.
Did I walk a tightrope?
No, you did not walk a tightrope, but I'm still going to walk a tightrope.
Sorry.
I know some alternative healthcare professionals who feel very strongly that muscle testing is an amazing technique if it is done very, very cautiously in a double-blinded fashion in order to remove all potential user bias. However, the scientific studies that have pitted muscle testing against other food sensitivity testing techniques, or have just looked at if you have one patient and you have them tested by 10 different practitioners, show that it is a completely unreliable testing strategy. So, I've never had muscle testing done. If I was suspecting a food intolerance, that is not the route that I would go. If it's a food intolerance in which there are antibodies formed, a blood test can give you some indications, but those are also sort of notoriously variable. In part, that's because the immune system is variable, but in part because of the sensitivity of these tests is just not optimal yet. The gold standard for diagnosing food intolerances is an elimination diet. And even if you did testing and it showed positive, with, you know, a standard MD, you would still do an elimination diet and then a challenge in order to verify the food sensitivity. You tend not to do that with allergies because allergies are so, it's such a dramatic reaction, and it's much more easily diagnosed because you can do like the skin testing or blood tests. Allergies are generally easy to diagnose. Sensitivities and intolerances are a lot harder, and really the only reliable method is elimination and then challenge. So you eliminate it, you see if you feel better, and you challenge it, you see if you feel worse. And so, you know, I think that Naz sort of did this by doing a Whole 30, which I didn't read that part of her question, but I think that, you know, tackling something like the autoimmune protocol, which is basically an elimination diet, to try and work out some of those details, or working with somebody like an NTP or a paleosavvy dietitian, somebody who can walk her through an elimination diet, is definitely worthwhile. I think that, you know, she's very clearly already figured out that gluten's not working for her. And I think cutting out, you know, generally, I think cutting out the non-paleo foods is a great idea. Surprise. I'm really shocked that a healthcare professional would diagnose somebody as having low stomach acid and then not prescribe a supplement to support stomach acid. Like, to me, just that disconnect in her question makes
me literally biting my mouth.
I just, that to me in her question, I mean, like,
yeah.
I don't understand why somebody
it doesn't make any sense
would
to me
do that
either.
Unless there's other, I mean, we've already talked about other cases where stomach acid supplementation is contraindicated, but generally if there's a contraindication for stomach acid or for acid supplementation, then you do the downstream digestive support supplement. So then
she's
not enzymes and ox bile.
Yeah, and she's not talking about any of that. She's also not talking about any of the natural things that can increase stomach acid either, like not drinking at meals and increasing your acidic consumption, you know, like putting lemon in your water. Like, I'm not seeing anything like that indicated. So I'm just
keeping it relaxing. The other thing is, you know, her laundry list of symptoms. One of the things that she did not mention that she's ever tried is a low FODMAP diet. And we're going to get to FODMAPs in the next question a little bit, but I really think that trying a low FODMAP approach for 2 weeks might be definitely something, you know, paleo and low FODMAP, if she doesn't want to go full like autoimmune protocol, because that can be really challenging, although paleo and low FODMAP is not a walk in the park there. But that would be definitely something that somebody at some point should have mentioned to her.
So I see how you walked a tightrope and you...
I didn't walk
You totally hung me out there first, like, go ahead, have at it, Stacey.
I did not. I ended up starting on the tightrope and then jumping into the net.
I think I might have pulled you in.
I got on up a soapbox, didn't I?
Okay. FODMAPs, next question.
From Kathy in Ottawa, Ontario.
But, Naz, we really like you and we like your town and you're really sweet to us. So we hope that we haven't offended you. We just worry. That's all.
We just think the second opinion would be a good thing to get.
And make sure to ask questions of anybody that you see so that you make sure you're being well taken care of.
Kathy. Our last question, because this is turning out to be a long one, is from Kathy from Ottawa, Ontario. I've dealt with IBS-like symptoms for most of my life. It's never been diagnosed because the one time I brought it up with my doctor, she said if there wasn't any pain, there wasn't any problem.
Listen, I'm like, we're at the end of our rope. We're tired here. We're punchy. That is ridiculous, Kathy. I hope you got a new doctor.
It's Canada.
It's Canada. I'm so glad you're here to say that.
I miss you, Canada. I'll see you next month.
But I won't be getting my health check up there.
Oh, as much as I love socialized medicine, there are flaws in the Canadian system.
I'm sorry, I've interrupted you many times.
Sorry. We could go on a really, really, really political tangent right now, but we're not going to. I'm going to continue on with Kathy's question. I did a Whole30 in January of 2013, and the IBS got worse. I gradually eliminated eggs and nuts and saw improvements. I had more improvements when I went AIP. I have Raynaud's and a family history of hypothyroidism. But then I started getting bloated and gassy all the time. I traced that back to fruit, sauerkraut, Brussels sprouts, and avocado and have finally seen success in completely eliminating IBS symptoms by eliminating all FODMAPs. I took a stool test for parasites, etc. It all came back negative. Could you please do a show about FODMAPs, causes and possible supplements and treatments? I'll just read the rest of the question. Is there any research to indicate that I may be able to reintroduce these foods after a while? I like how I feel when I'm not eating FODMAPs, but the thought of living the rest of my life without onions and garlic is really overwhelming.
It sounds like this is the diet for Russ from The Domestic Man. He gets to skip out on avocado and onions. Sorry,
he's like naturally going.
He's naturally
just by his like disgust with those foods.
Okay, so I'm gonna let you jump in. It's been a long show. I'll let you talk about the
science.
It's
been a long show, and I do want to say this is a great topic for a show, and there's enough questions related to FODMAPs that we probably could cover this as a whole show. But I kind of wanted to touch on this in a digestion problems show because I think it is probably it's either the top or the second top most common cause of digestive symptoms, and especially digestive symptoms that continue beyond adopting a paleo diet. The other one being SIBO or small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, and those two often happen together.
So what I will say in my layman's term answer to Kathy, and I'm sure she wants your smarty pants answer, is that yes, you should be able to reintroduce these foods after your gut has healed. These foods are not like an autoimmune disease food. Both SIBO and FODMAPs are caused by things that are happening in your gut that you can change. Correct me if I'm wrong, Sarah, but FODMAPs is directly linked to a leaky gut. So when you resolve the thing that is causing the leak in your gut and you heal yourself, and that could be 30 days, that could be 3 years, you should then be able to eat these foods without any problems at all. And I would recommend that you check out primalpalate.com because Bill Staley wrote about how he healed his leaky gut through a FODMAP elimination diet. And they have some recipes on their websites that are all FODMAP free. You can just like click a button and it'll show you everything that's FODMAP free. So you don't have to feel like you're missing out while you're doing this for however long it might take.
Okay, I'm done. I don't have to say anything.
Yeah. I love it when I'm not wrong.
You're not wrong a lot. No, so basically, yeah, it is a leaky gut or damaged cells of the gut, but it can also be caused by gut dysbiosis. So it can be caused by the wrong types of bacteria in the gut, which of course then is directly related to not just your diet, but things like stress and sleep and activity, you know, what types of fiber you're eating, how much omega-3, long-chain omega-3 fatty acids you're eating, I already mentioned stress. So generally what's now being, the FODMAP research is really continuing to evolve, and we've kind of hit this point where we're realizing that the, you know, highly fermentable fibers in FODMAPs, which, you know, is what makes them FODMAPs, are really beneficial for growing probiotic bacteria. But what happens when you have an overgrowth, especially if your overgrowth is starting to get into the small intestine, is then you're producing too much gas. And if you're not digesting food properly higher up the line, it's not broken down enough by the time it gets to these bacteria, and that's producing a lot of gas. And then if you've got either a problem with your fructose transporters, the GLUT5 transporters in the cells of the small intestine, or if you've got damage to those cells, then that also sort of it more of, you know, these fructose-rich fibers are hitting these bacteria. So there's kind of this combination of things. So there's take a break to heal, to knock down the overgrowth, potential overgrowth of bacteria. But then you really want to start working on adding these back in, because these fibers, especially these fibers in vegetables, I mean, I won't say that the sugar alcohols necessarily in fruit are going to be that great, but the, you know, the fiber that's in cruciferous vegetables, that's in, you know, cabbage and Brussels sprouts, that has some really strong benefits in terms of supporting the growth of the right types of bacteria in our bodies. So those are foods that we really do want to work on adding back in. So this is sort of one of those things that in the medical literature, it's kind of in a turmoil now. Like, how long do you do low FODMAP? And it sort of it depends is the answer. So some people can get away with as little as 2 weeks. Some people, maybe it's 4 to 6 weeks. Some people, maybe it's a year or 2 years, because there's all of these different contributing factors, and probably most of them are at work to some degree in most people. And so you want to be healing all of those things. So basic idea is take a break from FODMAPs for at least a couple weeks, watch your symptoms go down, watch the bloating go down, and then start adding it back in extremely slowly. And really focusing on fermented vegetables, because those have the FODMAPs already partially broken down. So sauerkraut and other fermented vegetables, and cooked vegetables, because those also have the fibers. The fibers are partially broken down with cooking, so they're easier to digest. So you're absorbing more, and also working on, you know, sort of the meal hygiene stuff that we've talked on and off about this whole podcast of chewing, don't drink a lot with your meals, don't be stressed, maybe taking digestive enzymes, maybe, you know, talking to a doctor about taking hydrochloric acid. Because what you want is you want to be digesting as efficiently as possible so that the right amount is hitting your large intestine. And so that really, you know, that's supporting your whole digestion as you try to slowly reintroduce. And what you're doing when you slowly reintroduce is you're actually trying to encourage the growth of the right kind of bacteria that are going to do the right things with that fiber. So that's a lot of, you know, Firmicutes and Bacteroidetes bacteria. And you know, those are the good ones. Those are the ones that we know are really, really important in the gut. So it's a cut it out, just give everything a rest, you know, work on healing, you know, broth and organ meat and seafood, figure out if you need digestive support supplements, and then, you know, really, really slow. And as soon as you hit the symptom mark, pull back. And then just really, really slow. And if it's a teaspoon of sauerkraut, if that's what you handle, that's what you start with. And you just slowly work on increasing it. Work on your probiotic foods, work on your gut healing stuff, get all your diet and lifestyle ducks in a row. But I really actually, it's not just whether or not people can reintroduce FODMAPs. I think it should be the goal, just because of how important those foods are for supporting a normal, diverse, healthy gut microbiome. So it is absolutely worth working on.
Awesome. Thus wraps an actual show. And I'm sure listeners are probably kind of excited. It's over an hour. I feel like we haven't done a super long one in a while.
Yeah. Do you remember the back in the days when all of our shows were like, this was a short one?
Yeah.
Okay. Just for our listeners, that was really exhausting for both of us. We're not going back there. But we'll give you the occasional long one for a treat.
I gotta go get in an ice bath because I don't want that ice to melt, heaven forbid, and not be freezing cold when I get in the tub.
I'm gonna go fall asleep before I fall asleep standing up.
All right. Was wunderbar, everybody. We'll be back next week. I'm super excited about our guest next week. I won't tease you in case it falls through, but girl crush, let me just say. So I'm super excited.
And I don't remember who the guest is. So.
You never remember.
I look it up seriously like an hour before we podcast. I was like, oh, hey, that's what we're doing tonight. Guess I should find some questions.
This person has a book you need to read before the podcast, so I'm sure you'll figure it out beforehand.
Uh-oh. Do I have the book?
Monica was getting you an ebook version. It's an ebook.
Oh, wait. Yes. I know who you're talking about, and yes, I have the book.
And you should be super excited considering what you're doing lately.
I will totally find time for flipping through it.
Awesome. So we'll be back next week, everybody. Until then, keep cool. Stay strong. Oh my gosh, we're so punchy.
I know. There's like nothing I can say that's not going to sound dorky now.
That was the epitome of dork.
I know, but it's like, it's now contagious. So if I say, all right, good night, everybody. And then people will be like, I'm listening to this in the morning. It's not good night for me. Why do you always say good night? I'm like, because it's good night when I record. But it might not be good night when they're listening. So now I can't say good night because it's going to sound dorky. So I'm just going to say, thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.
And what's her name? Because I have to scroll all over the place. Naz from Leamington Spa. Ooh, nice. So now I get to show up in the morning tomorrow for CrossFit with a sexy bruise.
You'll get kudos. You'll get you get street cred with that.
Awesome. I like street cred. I'll take it.